Hello, I'm Katie.
And I'm Leslie.
And we're all booked.
Welcome back to another episode of Sterling Municipal Library's podcast, where we talk to you about books we'd like to recommend.
And Cherie is bringing us today a book that was written by a food critic.
Yes, indeed. I got hooked on this book. I didn't expect to be hooked on this. I was searching. I came across this title. I thought, that looks interesting. Not the title Garlic and Sapphires, which is the title of this book, but the subtitle, Garlic and Sapphires, The Secret Life of a Critic in Disguise by Ruth Reichel.
What's really funny is her name is so big on the cover that I thought that was the title.
Ruth Reichel.
Yes.
Well, much like many fiction authors whose name is bigger than the title of their book, Ruth Reichel was the restaurant critic for the New York Times and before that for Los Angeles. So
her name is what's selling it.
Her name sold the concept, I'm sure, to the publisher who published this charming memoir, which Sterling Library owns as a downloadable audiobook through Access 360.
Oh. So I'm guessing because her face isn't well known, she's not one of those critics like the one from Ratatouille, where people make like this huge to-do about making sure she has a good dining experience.
But here's the funny part. As soon as her name was even whispered in the context of possible connection to joining the New York Times as a food critic, she was headhunted out of Los Angeles, and she was coming to New York for a food event whose name escapes me. It was probably a big festival. In the course of which she was going to sit down with the existing critic for the Times. And she was just going to have a meet for coffee and have a conversation. That's all she was flying to New York to do. Well, on the flight over, the woman seated next to her, this is how the book starts. The woman looks at her airplane food and says, are you going to eat that? And then goes into this whole deal where it turns out her seatmate on this airplane works for a restaurant in New York. She's like, oh, I know you. All the restaurants in New York have your picture up already and blah, 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 blah.
Oh,
basically, her seatmate was giving her the lowdown and the rundown on, oh, in New York, oh, no, your face is already up everywhere, along with your family and this and that and the other thing in these major restaurants in New York where a New York Times review is a big deal.
Yeah, it could
deal.
Make or break a restaurant.
Yeah.
Exactly. So this was completely out of left field to Ruth at the time. She was working for Los Angeles and she didn't think about that level of scrutiny. So when she heard this from her seatmate, she said, well, I'm not even going to interview for this job. I'm not. Oh, of course you are. Anyway, long story short, she does find herself accepting this position. Long discussion, little drama. But when she accepts the position, she realizes I have to do something so that I can review these restaurants
and on their own, like
on their own merits, on an average day, what my readers would see if they were to walk into this restaurant. That's the experience I want to review, not how the restaurant critic for the New York Times is treated when she walks in with the publisher, but what the reader can expect when they go to this restaurant.
So how does she make that happen?
Thus, The Secret Life of a Critic in Disguise. Ruth calls up her mom's old friend who worked in the theater.
Oh, no.
Oh, my goodness. This is amazing.
It's like a fiction novel.
It is. A little bit. So she meets with this former, I think, theater coach. Her name is Claudia. Please don't quote me on her job title because I was listening to this and I don't retain the fine details as much. But Claudia coaches Ruth and she says, are you going to do this right? What is the name of this woman? I'm going to be Molly. Where is Molly from?
Oh my gosh.
Molly's from the Midwest. Okay, you need this type of suit. You need this. They meet with a professional makeup artist. They get a wig because it's not just, we're going to slightly change your look.
She's one person. In my head, for some reason, I was just like, she becomes a cast of colorful characters and tours New York.
And yet, after Molly has had her walk, she becomes Miriam, her own mother.
Oh my gosh.
Who passed away, but who was Claudia's friend, right? So when the Miriam persona has had a little time, she needs another persona because her personas can get hacked. The restaurants might start to recognize Molly or so. Okay, well, now we're going to be Miriam. What does Miriam look like? You need this, this, and this. And oh, now we're going to be Chloe. So in the course of this book, Ruth becomes several different people. And what she learns is that she became these several different people to learn something about the restaurants. But she also learned about herself because she truly did take on different personas and behaved in ways that she would not and ordered things that she might not have ordered and experienced them differently. When you're a restaurant critic, you have a constant voice in your head analyzing every facet of the experience from the critic's side. But when, especially when she embodied Miriam, her mother, she experienced the food differently, how her mother might have experienced it. So it was a learning experience for her as well. And
did she ever choose to play the role of a difficult restaurant customer?
She played her mother.
Okay. I kind of wondered if that's what that entailed.
Who was quite difficult and would frequently send things back. Oh, well, that martini is in a wine glass. I suppose that can't be helped, but it is also warm and that can.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So the audio, I've enjoyed listening to this book on audio. The reader does a good job of portraying the different people. You don't feel jerked out of this story whenever she changes voices. There are times when I cringe listening to audio and I sort of skip ahead.
Yeah.
And there are some points in this book where you cringe when she uses the wrong word in a review and ends up in the criticism of the New York Times writers, the greenies. And then when she was being her mother in the restaurant, I had to skip a little bit for myself.
Yeah.
But the reader does a very good job. In the course of listening to this, you are hearing the book through the reader's voice as well, which is funny because you're reading a book about embodying multiple personas in the course of tasting food, and you're listening to it through the filter of the reader as well as the author.
Yeah.
And there are times when I suppose it might be the danger of reading a book written by a professional, very big name restaurant critic. Sometimes it comes across as a bit pretentious.
Yes, I could see that.
Food critics often have those moments.
Not in the course of the selection of the food, but just, you know, Ruth was born in New York. She's lived in Los Angeles for a while, but she's back in New York. She works for the New York Times. She is living a food critic's life in New York, a restaurant critic's life. So there are times when some of that experience sounds a little bit pretentious to my small town Louisiana, Texas ears.
Yeah.
Did she say how she even came into that profession?
Not so far.
Okay.
When you meet her, she's already well established in her field, well enough known that she's being headhunted for the New York Times.
Now, you mentioned that she talked with one of the previous critics. I don't know anything about food critics other than, in theory, they're supposed to be anonymous because otherwise you get special treatment. Does it mention whether or not that's a normal practice to, like, disguise yourself or to remain anonymous somehow?
Some level of anonymity, you infer, yes, that some level of anonymity is standard. You would make the reservation under someone else's name, or she already went into this with a credit card in Molly's name.
Okay.
It's like, how did you do that? Well, I just applied for a credit card. It turned up. I have everything sent to myself. So there's some, I guess, identity theft for a fake person, identity creation. Now, this book was written in 2005.
Yeah.
And obviously was set prior to that for a number of years. I have no idea what food critics and restaurant critics do today to ensure that they have an unbiased experience and an unbiased review of the businesses. But it is mentioned at one point, the prior critic stays on staff at the New York Times writing something else.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit of a problem because when Ruth comes on board, at first he's super eager to help her out. Then he gets really cold-shouldery toward her. And Ruth says to the secretary, who knows everything, "What is going on here?" And she said, "Well, honey, you are the restaurant critic for the New York Times." And he isn't anymore. He had fallen into the trap of believing that everything, all the special treatment, and it was all about him. And he had the power and it was about his name. Don't ever think that. The power is the New York Times.
Yeah.
Right.
The job is the power. You are not that important.
Yes. But in the course of that, she now holds the cloak of that power.
Yes.
And he no longer does. And when that dawns on him.
You're eager at first until you realize you go to a restaurant and no one cares what you think.
Exactly. Oh, you're the former critic, but you're not the current critic. You can't give us 4 stars, which is a huge deal.
Were there any restaurants that she described that you wish you could go to?
She described a sushi restaurant that I would love to go to and have someone else pay for.
Exactly. I know that's the other part of it.
That is part of it. But one of the things that Ruth chooses to do is, one point is to specifically review restaurants that are not the haute cuisine Italian
$5+ venues.
$5 signs on Yelp.
She chooses to review more ethnic restaurants, Korean or Japanese or Mexican, or she wants to seek out more variety in her restaurants. And previously, that might not have been deemed worthy of the Times to review.
Mm-hmm.
And one of her first reviews is for a ramen place, I believe.
Oh my gosh.
They can be so good.
Yes.
It's a noodle place for sure.
Mm-hmm. Something like pho or ramen.
Let me back up. I think it's udon. It's a noodle place.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I was listening to this and it's been a few days.
Yeah.
And she writes this review and she was trying to say, well, I want to give this place 3 stars. Her voicemail blew up. Get the real critic back. How dare you give this little nobody's heard of this place 3 stars. So she has some bumps in the road adjusting to life as a New York Times restaurant critic.
Racism and classism.
Classism for sure. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, she also hears from readers who are happy to hear a real person's experience or a place that a real person could conceivably go.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, how many of us are going to walk into Le Cirque? Nobody, for one thing, because you need a reservation. But
right.
When Ruth writes her first review, she wants to merge the experience that she had under her own name when she went as herself and the experience that she had as Molly. Mm-hmm. And it was two very different experiences.
Oh, so she goes multiple times.
Yes, and I didn't know this because you're expected to visit a restaurant multiple times before you assign a star rating.
That makes sense. Because, I mean, if they happen to have an off night or...
Yeah, like let's say the dish guy never came and all the plates are coming out slow.
Exactly. Turns out you go more than once.
Yeah.
So Ruth wants to do a parallel review. Ruth's experience and Molly's experience.
Mm-hmm.
And she writes it that way. And she gives Ruth's experience 4 stars. She gives Molly's experience 2 stars. Well, I don't remember the position name, the editors, the people responsible for putting this together, call her back and say, you can't do a parallel review. You can only do one. So they talk it through and they merge it. And she's like, but you've got to merge it. You can only do one review.
You can only give 1 star review.
Only give 1 star rating. They split the difference and called it 3. Mm-hmm. But I thought it would have been neat to see that side by side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It could be even eye-opening to...
Yeah, because most people will see 4 stars, and maybe it's something that they could afford. They'd go, and they're like, this got 4 stars.
And that's exactly the point. The place Ruth went first, that Ruth went and had an amazing experience, she went back as Molly, and she was shoved in a table in the back.
Yeah.
Nobody would give her a wine list. Someone took the wine list from her when she picked one up. Oh, I need that over here. It was not at all a good experience. So she does want to find a way to present the regular person's experience as well as food as experience.
If you're famous, basically. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, very much. If you're famous. When she walks into one of the restaurants as herself, as the food critic, the owner escorts her, or the captain, whoever is controlling the room, escorts her, and she makes the reservation, and she shows up 30 minutes early for her reservation. And there are people waiting. There are people who have been waiting 30 minutes past their reservation time.
Right.
She is whisked in, and as she's being seated, the head honcho whisking her in says, the king of Spain is in the bar waiting for a table, but your table is ready.
Wow.
Because in the restaurant world, the king of Spain is nice and all, but the restaurant critic for the New York Times
can really make or break you.
Yes.
Wow.
I know. This is when I first sat down, I did not do any research on this book. I saw the title Garlic and Sapphires, and I was just like, I have no idea what to expect. I don't think I expected like multiple identities to the extent where she even had credit cards in the people's names and like this weird like newspaper ethics, like review ethics, like type of commentary.
Yep, the title and the cover didn't hook me. The subtitle and the description hooked
me.
Did she describe any restaurants you absolutely would not want to go to?
The snooty one that seated the regular person in the back and wouldn't even give you a wine list.
Yeah.
I mean, I have better places to spend my lots of money than
it
that type of restaurant.
It's very Pretty Woman. Like, they're like, oh, you couldn't afford the wine list.
It's more like this more important person over here needs the wine list.
Mm-hmm.
Wait for it, peon.
Right. Wow.
Peons have money, too.
Does she name the restaurants?
She does, but I have slept since then.
I understand. Yes. You can always look at the New York Times as well if you don't.
Well, and remember, this is all written prior to 2005.
Yes.
So I would by no means use her experiences writing this book as a travel guide to New York restaurants now.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them may not even exist anymore.
That's true. It's a restaurant world out there. Yeah. Is there anything else that you think is really important to add about this book that might draw people in? Or do you think you've done a good job kind of?
I think Ruth has done a good job of drawing people in.
Expressing the flavor.
She's written a bunch of books, but this is the first one of hers that I've picked up, and I'm happy that I did. Mm-hmm. I will say she doesn't bother with pictures. I ordered myself the paperback just because I wanted to have something in my hand when I came to speak to you two lovely mm-hmm. ladies. She, instead of putting in pictures, puts in recipes.
Oh, that's cool. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
And on brand.
And there's that.
Any recipe examples that you want to share?
Well, the recipes are conveniently located in the back of the book. They're a lot less easy to pick up when you're listening.
Right.
Although at lunch I was listening to her talk about a mussel dish. But she has something here, the very last recipe of the book, called the Last Minute Chocolate Cake. And that sounds intriguing because chocolate cake.
It has grand marmalade. Yeah.
With booze.
Oh, with some, yeah, with coffee and booze.
Interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought... I guess because she interviews, not interviews, I guess because she works with restaurants, I wouldn't have thought of her, like, providing recipes. But, you know, you have to know good food.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. Homemade or otherwise.
Right. Man, it would be really hard to be a significant other for a restaurant critic.
Yes. In mm-hmm. fact, her significant other tells her on several occasions, I do not feel like going out tonight. Honey, I have to review this restaurant. You have to.
Can you even imagine cooking for them, too? Like on those nights that you don't have to go out?
Yeah.
Yes, because flavor fatigue is real, even with amazing food.
Yeah.
Please, can I have a peanut butter and jelly sandwich?
Yeah.
Speaking for myself, I can't say that I ever saw Ruth say that. But Ruth does occasionally take a friend or a coworker or a colleague.
Yeah.
And not always her poor husband getting dragged everywhere with her.
I imagine, because wouldn't he have to be in disguise as well? Because they know.
Not when she's out as herself.
Okay. So, yeah, she only goes when she's mysterious.
Well, and somehow I doubt that the restaurants would post her husband's picture so prominently.
Yeah.
You walk in the back and you're like, are these people wanted for arrest? Oh, no, those are food critics and their families. Just in case.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Definitely. This was very eye-opening.
A nice palate cleanser.
Oh.
And stay tuned next week for more fantastic book recommendations.
Bye.